Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to ATP Radio, hosted by Annie Cyrus.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to ATP Radio's Islam Corner. I am Annie Cyrus, your host. Before we get started with our very special guest today, let me do the usual. If you haven't done so yet, please grab your cell phones inside America and text my name, A-N-N-I, and send it to the number 88202. You will be subscribed to our free 6-hour system where you get notifications, such as when I go live on radio, or where we have Bill Johnson on Thursdays on radio, or if there's a live feed going on. Also, you receive all of our material as far as articles, radio, video, on your cell phone twice a week. If you don't want to do the cell phone, that is all right. You can go to our website, americantruthproject.org, and sign up via email, where you will receive our newsletter twice a week, unless there's an urgent news to come your way. So with that being said, I'm very excited to bring on our very special guest today, Bosch Fawson. He is a very dear friend that I've known many years back in the time through Glazov Gang show. As I was thinking, how do I introduce him today, I remembered that he put a post on his Facebook that I loved a lot, and I did actually mention I'm going to use that. So here we go. With us today is Bosch Fawson, the first red-headed ex-Muslim to ever win a Muhammad cartoon contest. Hi, Bosch.
Hello, Annie. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on today with me.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. I look forward to it.
Absolutely. So since I figured out how to do the introduction, why don't we start there? How did you manage to become the first redheaded ex-Muslim to ever win a Muhammad cartoon contest? Tell us about that.
I was raised by Albanian Muslim parents in the Bronx, New York. They would be what would be called today, quote unquote, moderate Muslims, even though, as I often say, the Jew hatred and the misogyny was hardcore. Really the disgust with the West was pretty dominant. America this, America that, too much freedom. So while they were quote unquote moderate, there were still some, you know, things within the actual family that was really, you know, it's just a bad thing to really grow up with. But we, you know, I was fortunate enough to be raised in America. So whatever we were taught at home, we could be almost in some way untaught in school. We could learn about the actual things as they are in America and the West. And that's basically what I was raised with, and it was a lot less, you know, let me say, it was a lot less harsh than you and what you went through, but still there's that, you know, the dishonesty really got me, of all those around me, of the ideology itself, and that's what led me out of it more than anything else. It wasn't anything like a concrete issue that I just was passionate against, I just, you know, railed against. No, it was basically the fundamental dishonesty of it all. That's what made me leave in my mid-teens. And then I basically got out of it. My family didn't like it, but being moderate, they didn't kill me. You know what I mean? Since they were moderate Muslims, they didn't kill me, but they didn't like it. And then I, you know, basically within a few years, I think I left Islam, and then I found Ayn Rand's work. You know, I fell in love with her work, with the books on philosophy, with her fiction, everything. And then after that, I had nothing. I didn't think about Islam for years, until 9/11. Now, you know, over the years, there were terrorist attacks. And we heard about certain things happening, yes. But 9/11 brought everything back, and it made me go back and revisit it. And it's the first time ever that I had read the Quran, because we had a Quran in our household, but it was in Arabic. You know, my family can't read Arabic. It was just there as a totem, like. And then I basically started thinking about, after the atrocity of 9/11, I started thinking about what can I do as an artist? You know, I'm not a soldier. What can I do to respond to this atrocity? So I started thinking about Captain America. and superheroes and how, you know, how I can defeat the enemy within comic books, within my work. And then, of course, you know, Captain America and Marvel would never let me do that. So I started thinking about my background and how the pig was, seen as a disgusting creature. And so I started thinking about, okay, how about if I create an ex-Muslim superhero who wears pigskin leather and hunts down jihadists? And that's what I was thinking. And then after a while, I said, you know what, that's not enough for me. While I love superheroes, I wanted to basically pull back and say, okay, how about if I make a story about the cartoonist that's behind Pigman? And he has a twin brother who's a born-again Muslim, and the cartoonist, the Pigman, is a recovered Muslim. And they battle it out. And that's basically where I brought my work with my history of Islam into the fore. And then, of course, the Charlie Hebdo massacre happened. And Pamela Geller responded to that with having an event at the same place that a few months earlier, after the Charlie Hebdo massacre, we had a conference called something along the lines of Defend the Prophet. I think it was called Defend the Prophet, meaning they were walking over the dead bodies of these cartoonists to defend Muhammad instead of defending the West, instead of being Americans and understanding the issue of free speech and respecting it. No. So Pamela said, to hell with that. We're going to have a contest, Muhammad cartoon contest. And I entered and ended up winning. And, you know, my life has not been the same since. I will say that. I can't get into details clearly. But that's where we are, basically, at this point.
Well, thanks for sharing that. And for our audience, if you have not seen any of Bosch's work, I strongly suggest you look into him. I actually had the privilege to meet him in person, and I have the Pigman
yes.
autographed by him. But you see, you mentioned something that what can I do with my art? I'm not a soldier. I actually consider you a soldier because I'm pretty sure you knew going into that genre from Pigman stories to Muhammad drawing contest, you knew what you're about to face, and you still did it.
There's no doubt about it, and I appreciate that, because that's an incredible compliment, because some soldiers even write me and tell me, well, you're fighting in your own way, and I do appreciate it, and you do the same thing, because we understand what we're facing here. We're facing savages. We're facing brutal, brutal people who are against the West, who are against life itself. And I'm not going to stand by and just allow them to, you know, just have, you know, basically to silence all of us. Now, most if not all of my field hasn't mentioned anything about this. They pretend I don't even exist. I think it was a free speech publication. I forgot what it was called, but they were talking about the title was Cartoonists Under Fire, right? This was after Garland, and I was not showcased there. Everyone else was. You know, it's like, wait a minute, I was literally under fire, and I called them out on it, and we had it back and forth, and I said, this is ridiculous. I said, I understand that you guys can pretend I don't exist, but I do exist, and this problem still exists, even if you ignore it. It doesn't matter. And then you got other people like Frank Miller, whose work I've loved over the years. But he used to speak about free speech in very passionate terms, right? Until this is a fact, until Charlie Hebdo, I haven't heard him say anything about it. Nothing. Nothing. He hasn't drawn Muhammad. He hasn't spoken out the way he used to about the issue of free speech. I wrote this one thing. It was my Draw Muhammad Challenge. I wrote it, I think, a couple of years ago, and a good friend of mine referred to it as a manifesto. She referred to it as my manifesto. Basically, it's everything I wanted to say about the issue of free speech and Draw Muhammad. And it's on my store's website. My blog was, it was erased from Google overnight. So it's not there any longer, but it's in my store, the Bosch Fossil store. It's called the Draw Muhammad Challenge. And basically, it's all these challenges today, the water challenge, this challenge. So I said, you know what, let's have a serious challenge here. Come on, my fellow cartoonists. Draw Muhammad. You know, let's get out there. Prove that we can do it, because we still have the freedom of speech. If we don't act on it, if we don't exercise it, then we will lose it. So long as we have it, we should exercise it. And that's my challenge in my article. And I ended up publishing it in one of my last books. I think it was called Islam Bitches. It's my book on Islamophiles across the centuries. And I think that's what they deserve to be called, Islam Bitches, because that's what they are. They're absolute. They're kowtowing to evil. And I'm just sick of it. And, people say, will you stop drawing this? I said, no, I won't. I will continue to draw. I've drawn them over 500 times now, Muhammad. I have books, I think 5 books, of Muhammad cartoons. I have Muhammad trading cards, playing cards, T-shirts, posters, prints. And I think these things are worth doing regardless of what might happen. Regardless. And if I'm to die for it, I'm to die for it. What greater thing is to defend than the free speech, that defines us. It really, really does. It defines us. Without that, we are just a typical country, and we can just fall into dictatorship without the issue of free speech. So long as we have that, we have to exercise it. And also one thing, I'm sorry, I'm going on, but that is the flashpoint issue. It's like the issue of free speech is not for things that are acceptable, not for things that are polite. You ask yourself, where is the issue of free speech under attack the most? That's where you go and defend it. That's exactly where you go. That is the flashpoint. And if you don't go there, then you're not really defending the issue of free speech, and you're not really a defender of the West. You're just not. You're a loudmouth trying to pretend that you're for free speech, but you're not. And that's why even after Charlie Hebdo, I was really annoyed with people in France holding up pens and saying that they were Charlie. It's like, no, put your pen down on a piece of paper and draw Muhammad, then you will be Charlie. Outside of that, you're not. You're just a poser.
Yeah, well, let me ask you this. Well, we both kind of know the answer, but Islam is all about fear. Muhammad himself said the heaven is under the shadow of the sword.
Yes.
But how far do you think, aside those who know exactly what they're doing, those who are keeping silent and keeping quiet because they're afraid, how far do you think Islamists can push until silent majority or those afraid of speaking out would possibly get involved? Is there a limit?
I mean, you know what? Look, when you see Americans falling from the Twin Towers to their deaths knowingly, and you're not moved by that horror, I think you're unreachable. I believe you're unreachable. I really do. If you cannot be moved by that horror to say something, at least, if not do something, to say something, to speak out against it, I think you are unreachable. Because that kind of thing, to me, there's before that and after that. And a lot of people were able to live with that. I can't live with that. You can't live with that. We can't. People can, and they do. And to me, I think people are unreachable to that extent. I just do. Will there be more people coming up? I don't know. I mean, we go out there and we do what we do and we say what we do. We say what we say and we write and have these interviews and everything, and just to get the truth out. But yeah, if you can see that horror and close your mouth and not say anything, I think you're absolutely unreachable. And it's a tragic thing, but it's a true thing. And then also, not just that, but then to pretend that it had nothing to do with Islam, that's another thing. And that's not even just the leftists, that's the conservatives, that's some of my fellow objectivists who basically pretend that, well, it's a deviant form of Islam that's motivated this thing. And then you ask them and say, okay, so did Muhammad follow a deviant form of Islam, or did he follow Islam as such? And I've discussed that over the years as well. I have an article called Calling Islam Islam, which basically brings it to the point where we're dealing with the ideology itself. We're not dealing with a deviant form of it. We're not dealing with perverted Muslims who are using these false terms. No, they are devout Muslims. And they want to take it to the limit. When those scumbags flew the planes into the buildings, they actually believe that they're flying into paradise. They actually believe that. So when they try to tell us that it's a political ideology, it's like a guy who flies a plane into a building is not doing it for politics. He's not doing it for anything other than he believes to his core that he's going into Islamic paradise. So that's why, to me, it was not just an act of war. It was act of faith. We have to recognize that. We have to.
And that's exactly where I'm extremely concerned, Bosch, especially last 7-8 months. As you know, and my audience know, hopefully they do, I come from a land that was conquered by these people. They watched for 43 years. My fellow Iranians have watched horror happening to their own people, to their own family members, their own daughters. After 43 years, they might be fed up. They do a standing up here and there, but for many years, they just looked away like, this isn't happening, this isn't happening.
Yes.
And I'm looking at it, it's exactly the same thing that is happening here in America, where
absolutely
actually more conservatives, I see more conservatives quiet, because liberals and leftists, they are speaking out not against the enemy. Actually, they're supporting the enemy, so they are loud out there. Conservatives are quietly sitting, praying and hoping somebody's going to save them. And worst comes to worst, well, they're just going to bow, I guess, like my people did.
I mean, it's a horrific thing, but it's an absolute fact. We have to make peace with it, because that's the truth. And one thing also, when you have a country like Iran that's taken over by these quote-unquote the fanatics, they're actually the true, devout Muslims. And what happens is the country goes to hell. If a country goes to Islam, it goes to hell. That's what it does. That's the natural home of Islamic countries, of state Islam, if you will. That's the natural home of leftist countries. They go to hell. And we have to, we have to save ourselves from that, because we are allowing. Now, we have a lot of Islamic apologists here, but now we have leftist apologists as well who are almost accepting what's coming as well. It's like about the BLM and the Antifa and the leftism of last year, the absolute nihilism of last year. And there's not a revolt against it. It's scary. But to me, the most dangerous enemy is the most dangerous domestic enemy is the left. But the most dangerous, I think, in terms of the world, well, you have China as well, but the Islamic enemy, because they haven't gone away. They haven't been put down like the mad dogs they are. Bush didn't do it. Obama didn't do it. Trump did it to some extent with ISIS, but not enough. I mean, I always believe that, if U.S. president, if he's being true to his position of power, he would have wiped this enemy out, no matter how many years later. It doesn't matter. That can never happen again. 9/11, they can't. They, beyond blew it. They allowed it to happen to some extent by appeasing this enemy, decade after decade after decade. And it's scary. Even the decent politicians aren't willing to speak out clearly against it. They're not. And again, there's also, I hear from people sometimes, well, look, the war's over. I mean, we haven't been attacked. It's like, there are at least a few hundred people who are murdered every single week in the name of Islam across the world. That should be enough to make people, realize that we are still at war, that the civilized world is still at war, regardless if we have not gotten hit. It's like, in their mind, if America doesn't get hit, then the jihad doesn't exist. That's BS. I mean, we know that. There are innocent lives being taken every single week, every single day. And that is unacceptable. At that number, it was 170, I think, last week, 190 the week before, 255 the week before. The website, thereligionofpeace.com, they tally these deaths. They compile them. And even they tell me sometimes, we are still guessing at times. We don't know exactly how much, but this is how much we have been able to find out. And that is too much. That's just too much. I mean, there have been 230,000 human beings murdered in the name of Islam since 9/11. Since 9/11, 230,000. That's unacceptable. That's a global war that we have to fight. But we'll just, until we fight them ideologically, with our institutions, with the military, with our government, this enemy will go on and on. And the fearful thing is that in a nuclear age, in a nuclear age, if they're allowed to go on, they will absolutely nuke the West, nuke us, nuke Israel. They will do it. What's stopping them? Nothing. Not us. Not us at all. And what's stopping them? You know, nothing. Their religion, if they can get their hands on nukes and actually use them, they will use them.
No doubt about it. I want to talk to you about the nuke in Iran and all that, but we have a question on the chat from Stephen Mix. And he is asking, Bosch, I saw 9/11 turn many Americans into denial, so much that they blame Jews and quote-unquote inside job, everything but Muslims. What is that denial all about when people just want to appease Islam no matter what?
You know what? I can't say because I don't relate to it. I don't. I can't even come close to understanding that. It's a kind of mentality that is, it makes me sick, first of all. And I don't want to even understand it because it's so dangerous to this country. And because if we didn't have that mentality, if Bush didn't go out there and say Islam is peace flanked by two members of CARE and did his damn job, we wouldn't be talking about this today. We would be talking about some other threats. That's it. Because the enemy would have been destroyed. And, you know, they bombed some mountains. Remember that? They bombed mountains. They allowed Osama to get away to Pakistan. They knew he was there. I mean, what? Pakistan didn't know? We didn't know? Give me a break. He was there for like 9 years. So I don't understand the mentality. I really don't. If I try to, it seems like I gotta go to a place I can't imagine going. Because when you see that kind of horror again, and you're indifferent to it, and you're apologetic to it. But there was an attitude also. There was a sick thing that I remember hearing from some people. They said, "Well, look, I mean, we must have did something bad because you don't fly planes into buildings for no reason." It's like they have no reason. It's all faith. It's all the ideology. It's all their beliefs. It's all their bloodlust. They don't hate us for what we do. They hate us because we're not Muslim. Period. That's it. There's no reason, for what they do. So I just. That kind of mentality, to be blunt, I don't understand it. I don't want to understand it. I want to just basically maintain what I think about it, what I feel about it, and those who I respect feel the same way. And there's also this thing where we have to make the masses understand that we don't really need to do that. I think if we had a growing minority to understand this issue, who can act on it, who can influence those in government, who can influence those in our institutions, in academia, in pop culture even, if we can do that, I think that could make a major difference because we have to get on a war footing. We're not on a war footing. We have not been on a war footing. We have not been comfortable with the idea that we're at war. We don't even, again, as I told you, some people tell me, we're not at war anymore. We are. There's an internal war against us by the left, and then there's a global war against us by Islam and China.
I would 100% agree with everything you stated, including that we don't actually need masses of people to join the understanding. I'll say what they say themselves, supposedly, which I like to make a note here. It's a flat-out lie. They say there's 1.5 billion Muslims. That's a lie.
Right.
Because my motherland, Islamic Republic of Iran, has a population of 80 million, and I guarantee you, I'll bet my birth certificate on the fact that more than 50 million of 80 million are not Muslims. They are stamped Muslims because they were born there. So you put that number together, the 1.5 is a lie. But
absolutely right.
they claim that right? Every Islamic country, when you're born, they just stamp you a Muslim.
Yes. Yes. I mean, and the ultimate conceit of Islam is that we were all born Muslim, not even just Muslims, but non-Muslims and Jews and Christians and atheists and leftists. We were all born Muslim. That's one of the great conceits of Islam. And we were all perverted away from it by these corrupt, religions.
And that's why
people.
We deserve to die.
Yeah. Yes. And then on top of that, about the issue of apostasy, you, me, we were born with the gift, quote unquote, the gift. Consciously, we were born with this beautiful thing and we rejected it. So we are 10 times worse than any infidel who wasn't, quote unquote, born with it, And that's why they want to get us even more than just the the regular infidels were worse than the regular infidels because, again, we were born with this beautiful gift of the truth, as they call it, the truth. It's a pack of lies. From the moment it began, it's a pack of lies.
All of it. I actually did a video today that will be published later today, specifically talking about lies and Islam and all that good stuff. But let me ask you this. So I have noticed that you are extremely involved and you speak out about the critical race theory going on thanks to the left now. And then I have noticed that the squad members, including Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar, are extremely big supporters of this.
Yes.
Would you do me a favor and educate my audience on racism in Islam?
Absolutely. I mean, they even today, 2021, they still Arab Muslims still have black slaves today. 2001. That's a fact. Muhammad himself didn't like certain darker, darker Muslims darker Arabs in the area. My family itself, racist, to the point where they actually idolized Hitler. They idolized Hitler. Why? Because he killed more Jews than anyone. So that's why I refer to Hitler as Islam's favorite infidel. They forgive him to some extent his infidelity because, he killed more Jews than anyone. So you might be able to elaborate on that as well in terms of your experience with Islamic racism.
Didn't Mohammed refer to this black guy as the resin, I believe?
Yes, raisin. Yes, raisin.
Yes.
Right.
Because also, my favorite person, and I'm being very sarcastic, everybody, Linda Sarsour did this speech where she's so fired up. And she's like, Prophet Mohammed was the first human rights activist. Prophet Mohammed was the first women's rights activist. I'm like, what?
Yes. There's a war of who's a bigger liar, leftists or Muslims. And I can't say right now. I don't know. Because they're really in hardcore competition. Okay.
Leftists. Let me tell you why. Muslims don't lie. Bosh. They did 9/11. They did the Boston Marathon. They have told the truth.
Yeah. And but then also Muslims say the Jews did it. As they celebrate 9/11. So they celebrate 9/11, and then on top of that, they blame the Jews, and they tell me, basically they say, look, the Holocaust is not real, but we want to do another one. It's like, what do you mean? What do you mean another one? As in, you agree that there was a Holocaust. So they will say two things at the same time. So, as I said, they're world-class liars, both of these ideologies, and they're most, devout adherents, world-class liars. So, they will commit 9/11, absolutely, and celebrate it, and then blame the Jews at the same time, and then deny that they did it. So they will admit they did it, and then they'll deny they did it. So they want it two ways, three ways. It's illogical, but that's these ideologies. They're not about reason. They're not about thinking. They're not about truth at all. It's all about power now. And Muslims, every so often they need to release some bloodlust. It's not enough. It's not enough for them to conquer us ideologically. They have to see some blood spilt. They have to. That's part of their, that's part of these guys. And they can't wait to have these massive attacks like 9/11. They can't. And that's why I think they want to make even worse next time. Worse than 9/11. That's their dream.
Well, what do you expect from Muslims? They read the Quran. There are more than 600 contradictory verses in Quran itself.
Yes.
But when there Allah contradicts himself, what do you expect from the followers? Of course they're going to contradict themselves too.
Exactly. Right.
But now I hope my audience realize there is no equality under Islam. I don't care how much Ilhan Omar goes out there saying whatever, or Rashida, or any of them. It's pretty simple. Open the Quran. You'll see it. Women are considered half of a man. literally by half of a brain. Chapter 4, verse 34 refers to the fact that Allah gave women half of a brain and gave a full brain to men.
Mm. And in my upbringing, I don't know of one woman in my family who wasn't beaten by whether her father, brothers, husbands, not one. Not one. And that's in America.
Well, that goes back to the same verse, chapter 4, verse 34. If you think, you just think you don't need to wait for it to happen or have evidence. You just think your wife is about to disobey you.
Right.
You have the right to beat her.
Yes, you do. That's the, And when this Sarsour, she's an evil piece of crap, and she's out there just, she knows she's lying also. She knows it. But she's cashing in. Her and the others are just absolutely cashing in on this culture. And that's one can argue America is so great that even its enemies can make a killing from it.
I'm so glad you say that. I get so frustrated when people are like, oh, Linda Sarsour is just a puppet. No, she isn't. Ilhan Omar is a puppet. No, she isn't. None of these are puppets. They are very well aware of what they're doing.
Absolutely. I mean, they're conscious. They're evil. They hate the country. They want power over others. And if they can get it through the Democrat Party, at least at this point, in their mind, they're using the left to do what they do. In their mind, if they can take over, they would do it in a split second and mistreat the left like all Muslims mistreat others. They see them as tools, period.
Exactly. And all of these, I just love how this leftist thing, when Islam conquers, somehow they're going to spare them.
Yes.
And make friends with them.
Right. It's unbelievable. And they will, let's say it gets a nightmare scenario. They will wipe them out because the left will think that they're friends now. No, absolutely not. They will wipe them out. They might even wipe them out first if they get in power. People say, well, it'll never happen. Well, a lot of things. Look at the last year. Well, this will never happen. That will never happen. Things keep happening again and again and again. 9/11 happened. That never happened before. It's an atrocity that still haunts me to this day. I mean, within a couple of months, it'll be 20 years, and this enemy is still undefeated. That, to me, that in itself is, I don't know how to put it in words, but it's infuriating. This enemy still lives and breathes. Al-Qaeda is still intact. No matter how weak we're told they are, they still exist. ISIS, they still exist. I mean, 130 different terrorist groups, Islamic terrorist groups exist. They should have been wiped out, but they haven't been. And that's why we are playing a dangerous game, because we live in a world that has nuclear weapons. We can't afford to have this enemy, continue to go on with that, with those weapons that they can get their hands on. We can't. But we are.
But you know, that you're very correct. The enemy still exists. But more a scary part of it is not only the enemy still exists, but the enemy still exists with way more power than back then.
Yes, absolutely right. Absolutely right. They have only empowered themselves because of our weakness. They've gotten more powerful. They've gotten more brazen. They threaten us even more. They, as I said, it doesn't. We don't need to see another. Just because America has been attacked doesn't mean anything. And globally, it doesn't. Again, a few hundred people get murdered every single week. That should be enough to make people say, wait a minute, what the hell is going on? When I post that one little, the image every week from the religionpeace.com, people are so surprised. Some of them are they can't quite believe it, actually. But that's a fact. They are still, and you're right, they have gotten more powerful. They have, America and the West have become more Islamic post 9/11 than the other way around. Remember when, Bush was talking about, it'll be democracy and all that. Democracy there means vote for this thug over that thug. That's their democracy, quote unquote. In the quote unquote Palestinian areas, vote for the ones with those rockets instead of those rockets. Vote for that terrorist group over that terrorist group. That's your form of democracy. But yeah, it's just you're right. You're absolutely right. They've gotten more powerful, and we become slightly, to some extent, more Islamic by accepting the squad Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib by accepting them as being part and parcel of this politics in this country. They're evil. They hate the country. And however, they're always biting their tongues, though, no matter how disgusting they are, and they are, you know, but they still have to bite their tongues because they can't say what they really mean. Because what they really mean is, I mean, that might make them lose power. It's possible. It's possible. But yeah, the fact that there are two, if not a few more, I think there's also Ellis, and then there's another one, there's a male guy. I think there's four Islamic, you know, congressmen. That's one too many. That's four too many. If it becomes a thing where it gets 10, 20 in a few years, that starts to get a real problem because they got political power. And what do? They always shove Islam down our throats. They don't take care of their constituents. They don't worry about the Constitution. It's all about Islam. All about Islam. There was even a Texas judge the other day, a disgusting Texas judge who basically threw a Muslim woman to the wolves, to Islamic law. He says, well, we're not equipped to deal with this. Islamic law has to do with it. And she basically agreed to it when she married this guy. This is an atrocity. You know, he should be debarred. He should be taken off his judgeship, whatever it's called, kicked out of power. He threw a woman to the wolves in this country.
Yeah, but why would they do that? Our Senate just confirmed a practicing Muslim judge gave him a lifetime position who has lied under oath claiming he doesn't know anything about Sharia. Nobody's even bothered. No one has said, excuse me, Judge Qureshi, if you don't know anything about Sharia, how do you claim to be such a high prestigious Muslim who's constantly being awarded by other Islamic organizations?
And that's the thing, they will lie. And that's why, again, however disgusting the Tlaib and Omar are, they bite their tongues. They can't be fully honest. They can't. They can't say, I hate this country, I want to see it destroyed, and I'm doing my part to do so. They can't say that. They think that. Even the left thinks that. I mean, you know, when leftist terrorists, Antifa and BLM were on the streets screaming death to America, they stole that from Iran. But they believe it. Sometimes the truth, they feel so, I guess, powerful in their own minds that they can just spill out the truth. But Tlaib and Omar, I think they still bite their tongues. I think they do, but they are a dangerous sign because we can't afford any more of them. We can't. Again, imagine 5 of them, 10, 20 of them in this country. That's a danger zone. We got enemies within our government, enemies of the country. We already have that with the left. We do. But then, you know, and again, you know, when people tell me, oh, both parties are the same. Really? Where is the Republican Tlaib and Omar? Where are they? Yeah, the Republicans are weak. Absolutely, they are. But it's still an American party. It still is an American party. The left is not. The left is an anti-American party, fundamentally.
Oh, agreed, 100%. Yeah, the Republican Party, unfortunately, is extremely, at this point, I don't even say they're weak. I say they're very much acting like cowards. They don't even want to confront these people. Like, again, I'm still waiting for a majority of Republicans to stand up and basically say, okay, Ilhan Omar have had enough controversy. She is officially out there hating on Jews, and she officially came out and compared America to ISIS and Al-Qaeda. It's time to sit her down and see where she stands. No, they're all hiding. No, I don't want to confront her. I don't want to be Islamophobe because Islamophobia is apparently the new cancer. God forbid if you get it.
I mean, Islamophobia. It's like mentioning Nazi phobia during World War II. That's how much BS it is. It's like, who the hell mentioned Nazi phobia in World War II? Nobody. Who mentioned communism phobia? Nobody. It's an absolute lie. It's a weapon used by the enemy, period, to shut people up, and it works. Unfortunately, it works.
Yeah, I don't understand. I said this many times. I think I repeated it millions of times that phobia, that's an irrational, unreasonable fear. We are not irrational.
Exactly right.
This people blew up us.
Yes, they did.
Buildings, people, went into gay clubs and killed people. They do the terror attack. They do their jihad. There is a very good rational reason to fear these people.
Good point.
I do fear them.
I've read them. Yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely. I mean, look, I was at an event for a contest, a cartoon contest. Now I anticipated the possibility that they might try something, but Pamela Geller was so, you know, Pamela Geller and Robert, they basically took care of business. They had a SWAT team here. They had guards. They had everything. So we figured, okay, even if they come, they're probably gonna get it. But still, when it happens, it's pretty surreal. I mean, you are there. We are exercising freedom of speech. And that happens. These guys come from Arizona. And on top of that, tragically, to say what kind of mess we are, there was an FBI agent parked in front of them. He came with them. He was the one who was egging them on to attack. He goes, tear up Texas. They even told him to calm down. So basically, he was pretending to be Muslim. But the tragic thing is this FBI agent, who told clearly his superiors what was happening, right, that these guys were going to go to the event, he drove off as soon as they got out of their car. And they were fully armed. They were armed to the teeth. He got out of the car. Sorry, he went back to his car and drove off. So basically, the FBI would have allowed innocent Americans to be wiped out knowingly. And only a few news sources picked this up. I think it was a CBS special a few years ago. Tucker Carlson brought it up twice, I think in the last week or two, where the FBI has been in bed with our enemies, whether they're the Islamic enemy or the leftist enemy. And this is a dangerous thing when our own institutions start going against us in that way and would allow Americans to be slaughtered, mass murdered, allow them to be mass murdered. And then you got to ask yourself, wait a minute, why would they allow that? Was it Barack Obama's? Well, it was Obama's FBI, yes. But was it his way of saying, okay, if that does come to fruition, if they do get wiped out, then we can say, hey, enough of this cartoon stuff. Enough, okay? Look what happened. And shut down the issue of free speech, because that's the only conclusion that I can make, that an FBI that's supposed to protect us would allow us to die. Unfortunately, the cop was a sharpshooter, blew their heads off, and that was that. But the FBI agent got arrested a few blocks away because he was, I guess, you know, they said undercover, maybe dressed like a Muslim. I don't know. But yeah, so this is, you know, when our own institutions are going against us and not protecting us and trying to, you know, create things or make things happen that wouldn't have happened otherwise, that's dangerous. And then that same mentality likely got behind the quote-unquote insurrection, where there are 20 individuals who have been working to some extent with the FBI who were there and they're not being charged. And you got to ask yourself, okay, why aren't they being charged? Because they're FBI, if not agents, they're working with them. Maybe they were told to create ruckus, to start this thing, just to jumpstart it. So it's just, I mean, we can get into that as well, but that's a whole different issue.
It is very disturbing to know that. But then, as you said, what do you expect when you when you make history proudly to have the first Muslim president in United States of America who goes in and makes sure to erase any refer to Islam, jihad, Muslims, all of them, of any FBI training, what do you expect? This happens.
Yep. That's the natural result. I mean, this guy was born into a Muslim. He was born to a Muslim father, raised by a Muslim father. A stepfather, his mother was a communist, so he was raised by Muslims and communists. I mean, and the worst thing about Barack Obama is he never stopped and said, wait a minute, I've been raised with absolute crap and lies and hate in the country, enough of that. He's just a tool, is what he is. He never had the sense or the intellectual honesty to say, you know what, this is bad, I live in this great country. Why don't I try to make the best of it? No, he completely doubled down, and then he lied about that he's a Christian. Oh, yeah, I'm a Christian. Please. He's a Christian to get politics, to become president, period. That's it. And he's, you know, whether he's a, you know, practicing Muslim, I mean, people can argue, you know, he's probably a communist who has a soft spot for Islam or a hard spot for Islam. I would say that. Because he's the only ex-Muslim I know who is praiseful, who praises Islam to the hilt. Which ex-Muslims do you know who praise Islam to the hilt? I don't know of any.
I don't know any ex-Muslim who would even smile at Islam, let alone praise it.
Yeah, I don't know either. You know, people become ex-Muslim because they understand Islam. They understand what it's about. That's why they leave it. This guy, and then he had a question. What did he ever leave it? And that's what kind of thing that we have to think about here. Because, again, it's not a conspiracy. We know he was born to, you know, a Muslim father. We know that. We know he was raised by a Muslim stepfather. We know he loves Islam. We know he's never said a bad word about Islam, ever.
He went to a mosque and gave a speech and said, "Let me be clear, Islam is part of America." Remember that?
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And then he goes to Egypt and makes that speech there. And if you notice, now this is just a little observation. He had a slight little mustache. I know it sounds conspiratorial, but if you look at him, he's always clean shaven. That day he left his beard, let's just say unshaven. Whether it's a symbol, I don't know. But the Muslim Brotherhood was there in the audience. What the hell is the Muslim Brotherhood doing with the U.S. president? What the hell are they doing there?
Well, that was their setup to where now they can walk down our Congress.
Yes, they can. Yes, they can.
They can.
Yeah,
they,
I mean, these are...
Go ahead.
Sorry, no, go on, Annie.
I don't think I'll ever be ready to say his name without wanting to break down, but Phil Haney told everybody.
Oh, man.
Philip Haney told everyone they're coming. And when they came, when they were walking down our Congress, he told everybody, said, "You don't stop them, it gets worse." Phil Haney was the man who came out and said 400 or so number of Congress members have endorsed CARE on signed letter.
Yes.
Nobody listened.
Yes. No. Absolutely not. He alienated himself. I mean, he basically got himself in trouble to the point where his death is questionable. It absolutely is questionable. We do have to question it. And hopefully the truth comes out, the actual concrete truth comes out. What exactly happened?
Exactly. But, again, as you said it, as Phil Haney did it, as I always say it, there are a few of us who are not afraid to be killed if needed. But we're not going to turn our eyes and say, "Oh, no, this is just some bad ex." No. And that's the thing. When me and you talk, Bosch, it becomes so impossible to debate. Let me tell you why. When I'm talking by myself, the whole debate always is like, "Well, listen, I'm so sorry you had a couple of bad experiences with your father, but that's not Islam." And then you talk to Bosch Boston, and he's like, "No, I was raised in America with a family who weren't a sheikh and an imam, but I walked away willingly myself when I came to realize what a disturbing, disgusting cult this is."
Absolutely.
What are they going to tell you? It was just bad understanding? Well, I guess they do tell you that you misunderstood, right?
They do, and they tell me that. "Well, you don't really get it." I said, "I don't get it." And then I got some friends who actually presumed to try to teach me about these things. Like, are you kidding me? Now, first of all, I was raised with this crap. Then I studied as if my life depended on it. I read books upon books upon books. I read the Quran, reread the Quran, took literally 1,000 notes, not just for Islam, my studies, but for my story. Because I wanted to know the enemy intimately as I could, in order to make the enemy in my story as realistic, as authentic as possible, and then destroy him in the story. So I read too much, to be blunt. I read too much. I'm sorry about the things. I'm sorry. I'm going to try to turn off one second. But I've read everything I get my hands on. I'm so sorry, Annie. One second.
No, that's all right.
Thank you. Okay.
No problem.
Thank you. So, yeah, I mean, just, yeah, I've been told also, well, look, look, maybe you had a bad experience, but, you come on. I mean, come on. That's, I mean, it's like, no, no, it's not even just a bad experience. First of all, when everyone around you lies, when everyone around you hates Jews, when you see women, girls, women, grown women being kicked down the stairs while people are all around at a party by a man, by her husband, kicking her down the stairs, that's monstrous. And that is in America. That's where wherever the ideology goes, its evil goes with it. It doesn't matter in what kind of country it is at all. So I can't stand when people try to teach me about it. I get pissed off. I do. And I just let them have it. I'm like, you know what? To hell with you. I said, you don't know what you're talking about. You're talking out of your ass. And that's it. And I just don't have – I've become a little more intolerant, I got to say, over the years as well, by people who try to – play this name game. You know, I remember even some friends of mine calling it Islamic totalitarianism. It's like, really? So tell me about the non-totalitarian Islam. Where's that? Where's the non-totalitarian Islam? Because Islam is fundamentally totalitarian. It's fundamentally militant. It's fundamentally political. And then they say, you know, and look, I love Bill Warner. I do. But I even, you know, criticize history and political Islam because there is no apolitical Islam. There's, I mean, Islam is inherently political. And he didn't take exception because he published my essay where I even called that out, which is a testament to his integrity, I got to say, because he didn't take it personally. He basically agreed. The issue is Islam, but that's just the term that he uses. But, yeah, I guess I get really pissed off when people try to presume to tell me, to tell you, to tell others who know their stuff, who've done their homework, who have lived this, that they know better. Besides everything else, it's intellectually dishonest. It's absolutely intellectually dishonest. And they have not done their homework. They have not done their homework.
Well, of course not, because, well, that takes too much work. But since we are coming to an end of this episode, I do want to have your take on this topic, which is very, very important to me. And yes, I will admit I'm very biased on both ends. But so, Iran, the Supreme Leader just placed and appointed a new president for Islamic Republic of Iran. He has nicknames such as Butcher of Tehran and Execution Judge, and his birth name is Ebrahim Raisi. Now, he has sent out a lot of messages to America. For those of you who are not following, just look up Raisi's message to Biden. He's not going to show up for the negotiation. America needs to show decency and lift all sanctions, including sanctions that was placed on him directly by President Trump. Thank you, President Trump. All that,
absolutely,
you know, holding power. Now, on the other hand, the Biden handlers are tripping over each other. I kid you not. They are literally tripping over each other to convince this guy to come and sit on a negotiation table so they can reopen Iran nuclear deal. I'm sure from my tone you can understand that if I had any role in this, I would literally make sure that table is destroyed so nobody can sit at it. What
Absolutely.
Is your take, Bosch? Where
I mean,
is this disgusting, disturbing, worst deal of history going, and what is it going to do to us if Biden handlers actually make it happen?
Well, I think they are going to make it happen. And that's what the Iranians are counting on. They know that they have a corpse in the White House. He's an absolute corpse. He's a pushover. He's nothing. He knows that. And Iran knows that. And why is Iran – why are they flexing now? Because Biden's in power. One thing about, you know, Trump, like him or hate him, they were afraid of him. They weren't quite sure what he might do. The same thing about Reagan. They were a little afraid what he might do, even though Reagan, unfortunately, to his everlasting shame, and he even wrote about it, 283 Marines were bombed, destroyed, wiped out by Hezbollah, who was a proxy of Iran, and Reagan didn't do anything about it, and he regretted it. But besides that, I said to mention it. Yeah, this is a dangerous place that we're in. Again, not just a weak president, a non-existent president. We don't have a president. We have a regime that's made of Democrats. We have Democrats as president today. There is no president. He goes out there, he burps his stuff out and says his stupid things, and that's it. He's handled by those in charge. And those in charge, you got Valerie Jarrett, you got Obama behind the scenes, 100% you got Obama behind the scenes, 100%. He sees this as his third term. So you have enemies within and enemies without that are going to make this happen and empower Iran once again. And what comes from that, you know, who knows? But it's not good for us. It's not good for Iran. It's not good. You know, I mean, there was. Remember in Iran, what was it? I don't know how many years ago it was. Under Obama, were there protesters, and they did nothing.
2009.
To help the protesters. Yeah, they did nothing. Nothing. You got a girl with her head cracked open, blood on the streets, and we usually leftists would demand something be done, but they did nothing, and they still won't do anything. And as you said, there are a lot of Iranians who are not even Muslim, and they are, you know, they would be willing to accept the destruction of this regime, but with Biden in power and with that new guy that they're pushing in, it's going to be the same old, but worse. Because, as you said, and it's true, they've gotten more powerful since 9/11. They've gotten more dangerous since 9/11. And with, you know, in their mind, there's nobody in the White House. Nobody's there. So they're going to go and say whatever they want to say. And we want this. And they're going to say, okay, we'll give you whatever you want. So, yeah, this is just another, you know, a moment where the left empowers our enemies. Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing I got.
Yeah, I know. That's the only thing I got, too. I just don't know how to get people to understand this Iran deal. The first time around was bad idea.
No.
It was weaponizing our enemy, and let's not mention, I repeat, in Hadith, in Quran, in Islam, in Sharia, in Islamic Republic of Iran. Bottom line is bottom line. End game. Take down the great Satan, America, and wipe Israel off the map. That's just the common goal between every single one of them.
Absolutely.
When you weaponize them, you are getting them closer to that bottom line.
And they will act with impunity at a certain point where if they have these weapons, they will use them. They're not going to sit on them and do nuclear blackmail. No, that's not what these people will do. They want to use it. They want to use nukes. You know, at least the Russians understood, the Soviets understood, well, if we hit them, they're going to hit us. But the mind of the Iranians right now, if they do get nukes, let's say, if they nuke us, they still believe that we probably wouldn't even counterattack. That's how weak we are, where they believe, and this is what I think. I think even the left wouldn't even respond with a nuke after nuclear attack. The left. The right would. I think the right, even today, however weak they are, I think the left would not. I don't think so. I don't think that the left would respond with nukes if we get nuked.
I don't think they would either, because why would they? They want America burned down to ashes. They want it. They want chaos. That's why they have Antifa and BLM on the streets, because they're looking for chaos.
I mean, look, when we saw 8 months of murders, looting, murders, I mean, burning, looting, murders, you got 42 people murdered last year, 42 human beings murdered by these leftist terrorists. That tells you what they're doing. And for the media and for the Democrat Party to back them up and basically talk them up. And then now, of course, the greatest threat is what white supremacists say, white supremacism. And you know that black violence has hit such a level when leftists start crying about white supremacism, because it's all to cover up what's actually happening. You know, black violence has gotten worse than ever. It's been allowed to get worse. And of course, Biden and that whole crew, and it's not white supremacists that they're against. It's a smear against their opponents, the right. They're calling them white supremacists, but they're not. There's, you know, the KKK. I mean, this way I call Democrats, from the KKK to BLM. They were anti-black racist then, now they're pro-black racist, anti-white racist. But racism still is with them. They are still racist. It's just that the colors have changed. That's it. But at the same time, they are still black. You know, they're still racist against blacks because they expect no better from blacks. They expect no better at all. If they're violent, they say, well, you know, that's why they never judge blacks when they're violent, because they don't expect any better from them. So that's a whole different topic of conversation. Sorry, just got into that.
No, that's
because
all right.
Again, sir, and if we have domestic an enemy that is on the march, and we have a foreign enemy on the march, foreign enemies on the march. And why is that? Because we have a nothing in the White House. We have a not president in the White House. A guy has wanted to be president his entire life, and now when he finally gets a chance, he's not here. So it's his handlers. The handlers, that's who's in charge of this quote-unquote presidency. And that's scary because they're willing to say, you know, what? Also, they've seized the military, the U.S. military. They're flipping it. They're making it leftist. They're making it into this, you know, the CRT. They're shoving it down our throats. They're trying to create a leftist army that is only loyal to the left. That's what they're trying to do. And that's what the old leftists have done across countries when they took over countries. They seized the military and made it their own.
Absolutely. Bosch, tell our audience where they can go to get familiar with your work, maybe purchase your books or trade cards, and follow your daily post.
Thank you, Annie. Appreciate it. It's the Bosch Fawcett Store.blogspot.com. The Bosch Fawcett Store.blogspot.com. I have all my books. I have 7 books at the moment. I have comic books, trading cards, prints, playing cards. T-shirts, everything, and the one go-to probably is Facebook. Twitter banned me a few years ago after I criticized Marvel's Islamic comic. Instagram banned me, but then some reason, somehow, I'm still on there. Whatever, I don't know why, but so yeah, it's Facebook and the Bosch Fawcett Store.blogspot.com. Those are the 2 places. Thanks, Annie. Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure talking to you.
It was absolutely a pleasure, and hopefully I get to bring you back on so we can have more discussion about everything people really need to know about. I appreciate your time, Bosch.
Thank you, Annie. I appreciate it. Take care.
Of course. And to my lovely audience, thank you so much for staying with us until now, and I hope you share this radio with your friends and family because everybody needs to know about everything. Before I go, remember, if you haven't done so yet, grab your cell phone, text Annie, A-N-N-I, send it to the number 88202. You will be signed up to receive all of our material from everybody at ATP. If you don't want to do the text, no problem. Just check out our website at americantruthproject.org. On that note, stay safe and goodbye.
You were listening to ATP Radio with Annie Cyrus.